The Movie Files, a podcast featuring behind-the-scenes tales of motion picture history. Sponsored by Aplomb Publishing. Visit us on the web at www.aplombpublishing.com.
Welcome back to Movie Files. I'm John William Law, your host. Thanks for tuning in. We are mixing things up a little bit. I'm trying to kind of go into some different decades. So we're going to talk a little bit about a 1939 film called The Women. I don't think I have talked about it on here before. I haven't gone back and perused all of the history of these podcasts because there are so many. I don't think I've talked about The Women. It is a sort of an interesting film. There's sort of an interesting story to it in terms of not necessarily just what's on the big screen. The film was directed by George Cukor, and Cukor is a really well-known director. I mean, I've written about him in a book I did a couple of years ago called Goddess and the Girl Next Door. He was the director who was making Something's Got to Give, Marilyn Monroe's last film. So I researched him a bit then, and I do have a copy of The Women. I have seen it a number of times. I do like the film. Again, it was 1939, and 1939 was a pretty big year for movies, I think, in a lot of ways. Obviously, Gone with the Wind, The Wizard of Oz. The Women was another one of those films that was really kind of a watershed moment on the big screen. The Women is mainly known to people, or certainly movie goers who know of the film know it, because it was entirely a women's film. So there is not a single man that appears in the film or is sound heard on the film. The men are talked about in the film significantly. In fact, they're probably almost the entire topic of conversation for the entire film. But you never see a man in the film. The reason I was thinking about it was because I had done a podcast around the same time of this where I talked about a film called 12 Angry Men with Henry Fonda, and that it was a male-dominated cast. And so this one made me think that maybe I could mix things up and do something on the women. George Cukor at the time, he had actually been directing Gone with the Wind. So anyone who knows kind of the history of that film, and I haven't talked a little bit about Gone with the Wind in here, but I've not really done anything on it. I'm actually not a huge fan of Gone with the Wind, to be honest with you. It's a really long film, but Cukor was one of a number of directors who was associated with it. It was really MGM's kind of biggest epic at the time, and there was pretty much an all-hands-on-deck type direction or focus on it. So many directors have been associated with it. And the story, there are a lot of different stories around what happened. There were a lot of directors who kind of were either fired from the film, left from the film over exhaustion or things like that. Cukor was pulled off the film. Some people say he was fired. Some say not. He claimed he was fired. One of the kind of prevailing stories was that the film in many ways became a kind of Clark Gable picture, and Clark Gable was certainly the star of Gone with the Wind, and Vivian Leigh, who was Scarlett O'Hara, was a relative newcomer at the time. So Gable had a lot of pull, and he was certainly the studio MGM's probably biggest actor star, male star at the time. And Gable had some issues, apparently. He had heard rumors and stories about Cukor being a homosexual, and that sort of rubbed him the wrong way, some of the stories he'd heard. And ended up sort of, according to some of what I've read, he had an outburst one day on the set after hearing some of these rumors and said, I can't work with this guy. I can't be directed by a fairy, I think was what he actually said. And so shortly after that, they would move Cukor off Gone with the Wind, and they would replace him, and he would move on, and he would move back to MGM and make a film called The Women. And The Women was a perfect film for him. It was really almost designed for him. It's based on a stage play by Anita Loos, and it Again, it was entirely cast for women, and Cukor became known as a women's director, a director of women's pictures. He had an innate quality at bringing out the best in Hollywood's leading ladies. And so gradually, certainly around this time, even before this time and after, he would be a sought-after director that women leading ladies would look to him, whether it was Joan Crawford or Norma Shearer or Greta Garbo or... you know, Rosalind Russell, many of the leading ladies of certainly these, Katharine Hepburn, they really would have great relationships with him, and he would make them look their best. He would make them look physically the best and bring out the best performances in them. So this film was really perfect for him in that respect, because it does have something in the neighborhoods of like 135 speaking roles of women. Obviously, many of them are smaller, you know, supporting roles. Norma Shearer is the star of the picture, I would say. She is a married woman who finds out that her husband is cheating on her with a mistress who is a shop girl who is played by Joan Crawford. And she ends up going to Reno for a divorce. And the story that takes place, part of it is in kind of on the East Coast in kind of, I think it's New York, in a very kind of, you know, Art Deco type surroundings, very glamorous type surroundings, and these women in beauty parlors and stuff. And again, there's just, they refer to a man and talk about men, and they even talk to men on the phone, but you never hear a man's voice or see a man in the film. She ends up going to Reno for a divorce, and then meets another number of other actresses and people like Joan Fontaine and Rosalind Russell and Paulette Goddard are there, and they're all kind of at this place where they're going to get divorces, this escape kind of place in Reno where women go to get divorces from men, quickie divorces, I guess you could say. And so this story is very much a character piece of all of these women and their relationships with men and their relationships with each other. It is, again, there are some really good performances. You've got people like Rosalind Russell who really shine in the film. Joan Crawford in a supporting role. Joan was a really kind of heading into becoming MGM's biggest star, certainly in the 1930s and into the, you know, I guess at this time she was probably one of the bigger stars at MGM. Norma Shearer, who was married to Irving Thalberg. Thalberg had died. He was the kind of head of production. He was like the head of, so Louis B. Mayer was kind of the head of the studio, and then Thalberg was kind of the head of the production. And Thalberg was a relatively young guy, but he died suddenly not too long before this film. I don't actually remember the year, but Norma Shearer still had an immense amount of power at the studio because she had been married to Thalberg and she had inherited kind of his, you know, kind of certain level of his seat at the table to some extent. And so she was able to kind of use that. She would sort of retire from Hollywood, though. Not long after this, she would remarry and sort of step aside and move into other things. But she would still be involved in Hollywood and in movie making, but she wouldn't do a lot of movies after this. But Norma Shearer was certainly the star of this film. Joan Crawford was kind of one of the supporting roles. Joan Crawford, people advised her not to do the film, that she was playing this kind of mistress, and so it was an unsavory character. And Joan Crawford at this time was still relatively known as kind of a dancing, singing kind of, or you know, dance girl kind of, you know, in very popular films and very positive films. And so she was not seen as a villain at this time. And so people felt that, or certainly Hollywood, Louis B. Mayer said, you know, if you do this film, you know, you're going to come off, you know, it could hurt your career because, you know, people are going to see you in a very unsavory light as a villain. And so she wanted to stretch as an actor. She was not known as an actor at this time. She was known for kind of fluffy kind of, you know, comedies and, you know, romantic comedies and things. She'd done a bunch of films with Claude Gable, in fact. But she wanted to do the film, wanted to learn from Cukor, and would do a fairly good role. And it would be something that she would learn a lot in terms of how to perform, and it would bring her much success certainly in the films that she would make after this. And ultimately, she'd win an Academy Award for Mildred Pierce years later. But that is another story entirely. The film was, it was not, it didn't win any Oscars. So in 1939, there were Gone with the Wind really walked away with a lot of the awards. So it is unfortunate that it didn't win any Oscars for any of the performances. But I think a lot of the women sort of canceled each other out because there were so many. It was a marginal success at the box office. It cost more than $1 million, certainly $1.5 million to make, which was relatively expensive at the time. It would pull $2.3 million or so, I think, at the box office. So it did make money. It was a black and white film. This was just around the time where color was starting to come in. So you would see things like Gone with the Wind being all color and being very successful because of that, being new to the public. And then you would see movies like The Wizard of Oz, where you would have some black and white entry into the film. The early parts of the film were black and white, and then it would switch into color. For this film, again, it was filmed in black and white, but there is this Technicolor sequence in the middle of the film where they do this kind of 6-minute fashion show. And Cukor was not a fan of that. He actually wanted to cut that entire sequence out. But the studio was really just kind of beginning to get into this experiments with color, and color was now going to become the norm. And so you would start to see a lot of these big budget films, certainly in the 40s, and certainly all of the kind of musical dance films would really be colorized. And then you would get more of the gritty dramas would end up being black and white. And then comedies would largely be black and white for a few more years. You'd gradually start to get into more comedy, colorizing of a lot of these bigger films, because the public would be interested in those, and that would be one of the things that would draw them to the theater. As TV came into kind of more, common in households in the latter part of the 1940s and into the 1950s, the film studios really had to work hard to kind of find unique ways. And color, while it's something we take for granted today, was certainly something that was more expensive and harder to achieve, certainly in the 1939 timeframe. And so they were using it a little more sparingly, but they decided to add it into the women because they felt that this would be kind of something that would sort of, do something different and special with the film. And again, it would hopefully help, the film with the box office. But again, the box office was not necessarily fantastic for this film. Actors in the film, again, huge collection of women, and every woman who was kind of relatively known from, again, Norma Shearer as the star, Joan Crawford, Rosalind Russell, Paulette Goddard, Joan Fontaine, Mary Boland is in the film, Lucille Watson, Virginia Gray, Ruth Hussey, Hedda Hopper makes an appearance in the film, Butterfly McQueen, who was in Gone with the Wind and would win an Oscar for her role there, is in the film. And so it is a pretty, kind of big film for actors at the time, actresses. And it was remade. Again, it's appeared on on the stage. It's been done on the stage, but then it was actually remade in a film in 1956, I think. There's a film called The Opposite Sex with June Allison that also has Joan Collins and Ann Miller in it that was sort of a remake. And then they looked at remaking it in the 1960s, but I don't think it happened. And then there was a movie in around 2008 or so, I think, with Meg Ryan, where there was a sort of remake of it, which I, in fact, have not seen the remake. So the original film, though, is it's set in 1930, so there is a certain element today that seems sort of out of touch, I guess, because, women, I think, look at the film in a different way because of the way women were kind of portrayed in the world at the time, I think, was different. And so, I think you have to watch the film with that in mind and know that the film is taking place at a certain period in time where women were more about marrying men and raising children and families, and they were less about having their own careers and lives. So I think the fact that the film revolves so heavily around men is something that probably doesn't you know, work as well in today's world. But if you watch it for, you know, a kind of time capsule of, you know, 1930s, I think it actually is a really successful film to watch. And it certainly is one of those kind of great black and white films of the 1930s. So that's a little bit of a look at the women. Thanks for tuning in, and we will catch you next time.